The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to writer Robert Crane, co-author with Christopher Fryer of Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. The headline is that the book is about Crane's father, the late star of Hogan's Heroes, Bob Crane. But it's also a behind-the-scenes look at the career of comedic actor John Candy, who the younger Crane worked with for many years. Stick around. This interview is bound to bring more than one life into focus. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience that is going to want to take the fifth when today's show is over, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Nazis ain't funny. Most of the time. Two exceptions come immediately to mind, though. One is the internet subtitling meme based on the 2004 Hitler film Downfall, which has parodied Der Führer endlessly and to great effect. The other was the long-running 1960s sitcom Hogan's Heroes, which was based in a Nazi prisoner of war camp and starred a United Nations assortment of sharp-tongued, captured soldiers, including a Frenchman, a Brit, a black man, a backwoods Southerner, and an all-American WASP named Colonel Hogan. Colonel Hogan, a.k.a. former Los Angeles radio disc jockey Bob Crane, was a man who charmed German Fräuleins and officers alike. In fact, I think if the show was ever rebooted today, Hogan would probably be shown seducing men, too. His charisma knew no bounds. Now, the actor, Crane, was apparently irresistible off-screen, too. Mysteriously murdered in his Scottsdale, Arizona apartment in 1978, Crane's secret life as an uber sex junkie was revealed over subsequent years, culminating in the 2002 feature film Autofocus, starring Greg Kinnear as Crane. Crane's murderer was never found, although his eldest son, author Robert Crane, has long suspected he knew the culprit. In his book, Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder, Robert and his longtime friend and collaborator, Christopher Fryer, give the son's view to the kill. But there's much, much more to this book. Robert, it turns out, has led a damned interesting life himself, including being the right-hand man and confidant of the late John Candy, star of Uncle Buck, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, SCTV, and much more. So, readers who expect Crane to be solely about the death of Colonel Hogan will discover new insights into a second actor whose life was also cut tragically short at far too young an age. And Robert Crane, welcome to Mr. Media.
Bob, great to be here.
Good to see you. Good to have you here. You know, it's interesting, Robert. There's nothing on the cover of Crane to tip one off that this is, besides your personal story, the tale of not one but two Hollywood careers cut short.
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword here. You know, you want to move units, as you know, authoring books, and the publisher, University Press of Kentucky, couldn't put all these elements of the book on a cover. You know, they always go one frame, as most publishers do. So the obvious frame, and that's kind of the flipped over photo of my dad as Hogan, his, you know, most well-known achievement, I suppose, in his career. And I do like the one image kind of flipped over, that double personality, you know, the Hogan personality image that we a lot of people liked, and then the his other life that he developed later in his life, which got him into trouble and you know, helped with his demise, I think.
Now, I got to say though, they could have had both men on the cover, one on each side, called the book Candy Crane.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, John Candy is in there a lot, because I had the pleasure of working for him for many years after first interviewing him probably half a dozen times for different magazines, including Playboy. And he finally felt – not finally, he felt comfortable with me, and he liked the idea of me being a member of the quote-unquote press – when he ushered me into his production company to be his kind of a liaison with the press. He liked that I knew that side already. And he also liked the fact that my dad had, you know, been on a television star. It was kind of a shorthand between John Candy and I about fame and all of the things that John was dealing with. I saw it already. I knew it. And he liked that I knew that. So it helped a lot in our relationship, professionally and personally.
Was it difficult? We're going to talk about John a little later, but I'm just curious in terms of the construction of the book. Was it difficult to write this book? I mean, it's your life, so it seemed very proper to you that it starts with Crane and ends with Candy. But
right.
Was there ever any thought to writing it as two separate books, or was it always going to be one book?
No, I think Christopher Fryer, the co-author, and I decided, you know, it was kind of felt like one shot. You know, this is our chance to, as they say, write about what you know. And we had worked on two books previously, one on Jack Nicholson and one on Bruce Dern, both, you know, great storytellers. And I had worked on SCTV, Behind the Scenes, which is an oral history of the show, which I was a huge fan of. And I got to interview a lot of those people. And this was after John Candy passed away. So Dave Thomas, who put it together, said, you know, we better do it now before more people pass away. And I also had the pleasure of working with Tom Mankiewicz, who was a writer-director, who has also passed away since then. And he told great stories about, you know, growing up as part of a iconic Hollywood family. So long story short, Bob, all of these things drove us to a phone conversation in 2010 between Christopher Fryer and me. And we said, you know, what do you want to do next? And we both knew this story well. He's known me a long time. He played the kind of the Martin Scorsese role in this by pushing me, you know, why, where, when, why did he do that? You know, otherwise I don't think I could have sat there by myself at the computer and just typed up a story. I needed direction. So, that's how this came about. And, I mean, Chris's family is as interesting as mine, I think. It just happened that my dad was, you know, on television, and that's a hook, you know. So we went with that, and but both of our families share, you know, death and second families, and you know, step children and sisters and brothers and all that stuff. So we had a lot of similarities.
So where are the landmines in writing not only a biography of one's father, which, you know, right there, that's a big deal, but trying to add, you know, kind of new layers and insight into an unsolved investigation of this type?
Well, the landmines were all of the stuff that has come out since his death, and that was provoked by his my stepmother, ex-stepmother now, late stepmother, she's passed away, who was starting a anti-Bob Crane campaign because she had been in the middle of a divorce with him at the time of his death. Curious timing. The landmine was to step around all of the articles and innuendo and rumors and all the stuff that not only newspapers and websites have written about, but, you know, the trash magazines and all of that for years now. I wanted to step around that and report it as, a couple of my heroes are Joan Didion and Christopher Hitchens. I love the way they write straight ahead. You know, you may not always agree with them, but it's really agreeing with them off page than on page, because they, to me, they report it the way they see it, and they leave as much opinion out of it as possible. Especially Joan Didion and the two books about her husband and daughter. And I really admire that. And I wanted to do something like that in terms of just telling it like it is, with the point of view of being one of the kids in this family. And no one from the family has ever written or really spoken much about this whole case. You know, we come from a very un-Hollywood family. The first family came from Stamford, Connecticut, you know, a little small town at the time, and now it's a big corporate center. But and you just didn't talk about things. I mean, you didn't talk about success. You didn't talk about failure. You didn't talk, you know, you just, it was like they put your nose to the pavement and just keep trudging along. And that's what my mom and dad did, you know. And my dad got a big break coming out to Los Angeles to be on the radio, and that's how we wound up in Los Angeles. We were the pioneers in our family. So
now, in terms of the murder investigation, I don't want to put too much emphasis. You didn't conduct an investigation, but you certainly looked into things that had been reported. Do you or Christopher have any investigative training, or, you know, how did you kind of work your way around that part of things?
Yeah, formal investigative training, no, but we've always done tons of research on whoever we're talking to. And I've done research for interviews I've done for Playboy and, you know, on celebrities, which, you know, you can take with a grain of salt, or in the case of like interviewing Coco, the signing gorilla, you know, I had to do research because I didn't know anything about gorillas. We took writing classes, you know, and all along in school and college and creative writing and all of that. But I guess any formal journalism training, no, we didn't have that. But we dig deep, you know, we research all the information. I had tons of transcripts of interviews from the Scottsdale Police Department and the District Attorney's Office in Maricopa County, Arizona. And I went through all that. I went through all the writings, you know, over the years from, you know, the aforementioned newspapers and trash magazines and everything, and tried to explore, you know, different areas from, again, my point of view, but also keeping, again, double-edged sword, my point of view, but staying as non-opinionated as possible.
How did you and Christopher vet the book in terms of making sure you would not be sued? And did it help that some of the people that you talked about, your late stepmother is no longer with us, and John Henry Carpenter, who you know you suspect was probably the guy who killed your dad, is also gone from the scene.
Right. We were, you know, very careful. And again, through research, we never stated anything that could not be backed up. And in the case of a couple of other people in the book, we had to change a couple of names. And I cannot support or deny that right now. But I won't tell you who they are, but we changed the identities of a couple of people just to you know to make sure that there are no lawsuits and no unhappiness out there. But yeah, everything regarding Patty and John Carpenter, this was all based on you know police work and the district attorney's office and. I didn't make any of this up. I mean, it was all backed up. It was real.
Now, I know you loved your dad, and I know you were actually sharing an apartment with him, I think, at the time
yes.
that he passed. I'm going to guess that of all the things you might hold against your dad, probably the worst one, you tell me if I'm way off here, but if you were to hold anything over your dad's head, it was that he named his first son with his son with Patty Robert as well.
Yeah, it showed me weakness, you know, because, well, a lot of kids get to look at their parents as, you know, kind of rocks, you know. And my mom, I still look at her. She's still living. I still look at her as the rock who held the family together as long as it did. And I looked at my dad as, wow, dad, you know, this is dad. And I knew he was kind of a goofy guy, and I knew he was silly and kind of a big kid, and maybe in the end shouldn't have been married to anybody. But when he went along with the wishes of his second wife, my stepmother, Patty, to name their son Robert, it was like, Dad, oh, Dad, hello, Dad, me, remember, first family? Yeah. And he said, Bobby, don't worry anything about that. We're going to call him by his middle name, Scott, anyway. And, well, then why did you guys do that? You know, so never really. And, again, getting back to the kind of family we had, there was never a discussion about this. I mean, this was, to me, this was Patty making a power play. And my dad, with his famous don't make waves motto, which is in autofocus, just went along with it, and oh yeah, you know, it'll be okay, and you know, Bobby, don't worry about this, you know, all that. It just showed me weakness, and I started looking at my dad differently. I should add too, that's another reason for doing this book is the grand question of, do you really know your parents? Do they really know you? I mean, you can say that about everybody. Do you really know your husband? Do you really know your wife? You know, in a lot of cases we read about in the news, no. You know, I thought I knew everybody during this whole time. But, you know, certain things came up, especially with my dad over the years. And I was like, how much did I really know my dad as a human being, you know, versus dad? And, you know, things like your question about the name, that was a big red flag. That was like, wait a minute, hold on, you know, dig in for the first kid, you know.
That was, to me, and maybe it's because we share a first name, I felt your pain greater, but that was the thing that really, I just was like, how could you do that? I mean, you know, that was incredibly short-sighted. No disrespect to your dad, who, curiously, I never met your dad, but like a lot of people who I'm sure you've met through the years, I had the experience of watching Hogan's Heroes with my dad. So, you know, let me ask you this. Do you have any lingering questions still about your dad's, about the murder, about who did it or how it happened? Or even though officially it was never solved, do you feel comfortable that, you know, it's, you know what happened and it's done?
Well, as we state in the book, I've always felt it was one of two people. I mean, John Henry Carpenter, and never to be confused with the director, John Carpenter, was always the prime suspect from the Scottsdale Police Department's point of view from day one. I felt that they jumped into that circle too quickly and never really examined everybody else. I kept bringing up, and by the way, Carpenter was there. He was in town. He was in Scottsdale at the time of my dad's murder. He was a video salesperson who would schedule his trip sometimes to coincide with visiting my dad on the road for a couple of days, you know, wherever my dad was appearing in a play, to party, basically. So he was there. He didn't gain anything, though, by killing his friend. The only person who gained anything from the murder and financially was my stepmother. My dad and stepmother were going through a vicious divorce at the time of his death. And again, what curious timing. And she got the bundle. And, you know, it wasn't any multi-million dollar deal here. But at the time, you know, they had a nice house in Westwood, California, and he had some life insurance policies. And, you know, it was a nice amount of money for the time, 1978. And she got it all. And I found out later, after his death, there was a codicil to his will, which I'm not even sure he signed. The financial motivation is my stepmother. The friend motivation, the rejection motivation, is John Carpenter. John Carpenter was in town at the time, but curiously, 10 days before my dad's murder, Patty and their son had arrived in town, knocked at my dad's front door unannounced for Father's Day. And they're going through a really ugly divorce.
Robert, I think most people were or would be surprised to know that you were active in supporting Paul Schrader's movie, Autofocus, about your dad, that Greg Kinnear starred in. What was the reasoning behind being involved in that?
Well, again, it was the tale of the two families at the time. Patty and her son had gone on a X-rated website rant, exposing, bad word, exposing all my dad's, you know, private photos. I jumped on because I felt that someone from the first family, and it's a tale of two families, someone from the first family had to be involved in the making of this movie, because Paul Schrader was going to go ahead and make it no matter what. And we were getting conflicting attitudes and opinions from the people in the second family, including Patty, my then ex-stepmother. So I had to jump in, and I got involved with the script and sat down with Paul Schrader. We went through the script together, and it was a good script. Michael Gerbosi wrote it.
Were you happy with the finished product?
I was. I loved Autofocus. Back in the days of the old double feature, I would have put Autofocus on a double feature with Carnal Knowledge, Jack Nicholson and Art Garfunkel. I thought both films were talking about male sexuality during the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And the guy from Autofocus just happened to be my dad. But to me, it was more a story of the sexual revolution during the 60s and 70s. And I thought Greg Kinnear did a great job, and Paul Schrader did as well. I really enjoyed it.
So I'm going to ask you, I've never seen the movie, not because I'm a prude. I just didn't want to see the movie. But if you're happy with it, would you say I should see the movie if I'm, you know?
I would say, Bob, rent Carnal Knowledge and look at that first.
I've seen that. I like that movie.
And then mix a cocktail. Get the cocktail ready and put in the Autofocus DVD and watch that second.
Let's change gears a little and talk for a few minutes about the other part of your book, about John Candy. What was he like as a person, day in and day out?
Day in and day out, his one of the friendliest and funniest people I've ever met off camera. Because sometimes, and I'm sure you've had this same thing where you meet someone who's funny on camera, and off camera they're anything but. And he was almost, to me, he was almost funnier off camera than he was on camera. A sweetheart, would do anything for people he cared about, but he was also his worst enemy. He would second guess himself sometimes and, you know, arrange to do something and then pull out of it at the last minute or do a project for the wrong reasons, i.e. a favor to someone.
It struck me that there were a lot of similarities between your dad and John Candy. They're both extremely charismatic. They both had this bigger-than-life exuberance for life, and yet there was this darker side, which I guess we all have. I mean, you have it. I probably have it. But but it just – everything seemed more magnified with the two of them.
Yeah, because they were larger-than-life people. You know, again, my dad was an open book, which got him into problems, especially getting work, you know. Again, these rumors and stuff going up to the, you know, the executive towers, and they're hearing about their actor, you know, doing certain things he maybe shouldn't be doing. And John, his dark side was, you know, he'd go home for the weekend and by Monday, after some rum and cokes, you know, second guess everything that he was going to be doing the next week, you know, but when they were both on though, you know, they were killer. Energy and charisma, and they lit up the rooms that they walked into.
It must be heartbreaking to you that you lost both of these guys, both young, very important in your life.
Yeah. My dad, 2 weeks shy of 50. John Candy, 43. 43, yeah. Too young.
How did his family respond to the book? Did they know this was coming, by the way?
They did not know it was coming, and I have not spoken to them since the book was released. We do talk occasionally. We've kept up our relationship with Rose, his wife, and they have two great kids, Christopher and Jennifer, who are both you know, working in TV, sometimes in front of the camera, sometimes behind the camera. Great, great kids. But I don't think they've read it yet.
Do they know? I mean, you know, I mentioned at the top of the show that because of the title and the cover, you might not even know that there's a lot in there about John Candy.
Yeah. No, I know. Over the years, though, because this took 5 years to put together, I did tell them that, you know, we're writing certain things about John and my time with him, and so they know it's coming, but I don't think they've read it.
I could see you getting a second book out of this just about your time with Candy.
Yeah,
I mean because it's interesting, and he's somebody that people are fascinated with and will never know enough about. So
it's exactly, yeah. I mean, this guy was a comet, you know, and he had his time. And he shone brightly, but then he just flamed out, you know, not taking care of himself. And, you know, in his case, there was heart disease in the family already. So he was aware of that. And he almost kind of, because he knew that his dad died early, he lived every day like it was his last day. But that also gets you into trouble. You know, you're just taking on so much every day. How long can you keep this going? But he had more energy and strength than anybody I've ever known. He was a bull. I thought he would live forever. But
well, Robert, I must say I really enjoyed the book. When I was approached about it, I thought, yeah, I don't know. For the same reason I didn't watch autofocus. I thought, I don't know. And I started reading it. It reads really well. You and Christopher Fryer did a great job of writing it.
Thanks, Bob.
I mentioned to you before the interview started that I was really particularly interested in your work as a freelancer, as a freelance writer, and, yep. and 21 questions. For time and technical reasons, we're not going to be able to get into that. What I did want to ask to kind of wrap up is, what's next? What are you doing now?
I don't know. I don't know yet. As I said in the beginning, each topic we've gotten better at doing it, and I think you notice that about your work as well. You know, where you learn something. Hopefully, you learn something from the last project, and then you push more for the next project. And I feel really happy with what we did on this book. I think we pushed more than ever. You know, it just happens to be about my family, but I do step back from it and try to look at it as subjectively as objectively as possible. So to answer your question, I'm just looking for the next really interesting person or topic, or I don't know yet.
I got to ask you. I almost forgot. What do you think John Candy would think about Uncle Buck being rebooted with Mike Epps as Uncle Buck?
Well, you know what? I think he'd get a kick out of it. They did make one Uncle Buck already. You know, that was the series back in the 90s, I think, early 90s.
Right.
I can't remember the actor's name. He was a comedian. It'll come to me after we're finished. But and John Candy sent this actor a big basket, fruit basket, flowers, you know, congratulations, good luck. You know, it's like I did it in the movie version. Now it's your time handing the baton off to you for the TV. And he was had a lot of fun with that. So he would probably get a kick out of this. I don't know if John Hughes would, though. I think John Hughes might be a little upset about this. I don't know.
John Hughes, sure. For a guy who did some great comedy movies, apparently didn't have much sense of humor about stuff.
You didn't want to cross him.
No,
you didn't want
no.
him on the bad side.
No.
Just that, you know, a few times with John Candy was always on time and always knew his lines, but sometimes he did party through the night. And when he showed up on set the next morning, ready to work, John Hughes, though, knew he had been up all night and was not pleased with that.
Great stuff in your book about John Candy. For anyone who's a Candy fan or a SCTV fan, I really recommend they read this. So look, folks, you can find Robert Crane's account of his father's life and death, as well as that of his friend and boss, John Candy's, in Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. It's available in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are watching this at MrMedia.com, watching the video, either to the left or right, underneath Mr. Crane here, you will see the cover of the book, probably other books of his as well. You can click on it right now. Amazon can get it to you via drone in 30 minutes or less, at least that's the rumor, or you can get it shipped to you through conventional means in a day or two or via ebook. Robert, do you have a website? Are you on Facebook, Twitter, any of that kind of stuff?
I'm not. I'm so bad. I was on Facebook for 2 days and quit. I was on Twitter for 2 days and quit. I'm the best place to get a hold of me probably would be to write to University Press of Kentucky, who is publishing this book, Cameron Ludwick, who's the publicist, and she'll be able to help you or get it to me.
All right. You know, I hear that whole internet social media thing is all the rage with the kids today, so you might want to rethink that.
Look at my phone.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we got some work to do with you.
Look at this. This will get laughs. I think
Colonel Klink had that model. Well, listen, Robert Crane, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today and very much enjoyed having you here.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot. Pleasure. To believe her.
future believer. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
That kind of thing. I like the Q&A. I liked to just to do what you do, to mine information from people. That's what I still love it.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com, the George and Tony Entertainment Show from the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lowell Melser crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.